Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. On today's special edition of Health and Longevity, I will be sharing with you part two of a lecture I presented in Honolulu, Hawaii on medicinal herbs and herbal supplements. Now, what did the study show? And this is based on a book from the American Dietetic Association that I helped put together. The claims are for lowering cholesterol. There's a lot of good evidence for that. There's a question mark there because there's some studies that showed that it wasn't effective, but overwhelmingly, the articles show that it does help to lower cholesterol. There's some studies to show that it controls blood pressure. Now, you know, I was thinking a lot of times stress raises blood pressure for people, right? And most of the stress that people have is people problems. So if you eat a lot of garlic, what happens? Keep the people away from you, right? So maybe that's how it works. I don't know. I think there's really something physical to it too. But it does improve circulation. It's a good circulatory herb, reduces the risk of cancer. In fact, the National Institutes of Health, the National Cancer Institute, has identified 40 foods with the strong anti-cancer properties, and garlic is the number one food that they've listed in that group. Antibiotic, antifungal, antibacterial, antiparasitic, antiviral properties. Well, this symbol means that there's mixed studies. Some studies show that it's effective, others show that it's not as effective. And I think the ones that are not effective for antibiotics, for instance, the aged garlic extract where the odor is gone, has not been shown to be very effective because it's the odorful compounds that have the antibacterial properties. Gastrointestinal discomfort can be a problem. You can get garlic tablets in enteric-coated tablets. It's released down lower in the intestinal tract. Avoid garlic 7 days prior to surgery due to potential increased bleeding. So if you're going into surgery and you're taking garlic supplements or eating a lot of garlic, it's best to avoid it for 7 days. I do recommend you let your doctor know you're taking garlic if you have heart disease or you have any medical condition. I'm going to skip over some of these here, but these are some studies to show that garlic is effective for lowering cholesterol. By the way, one garlic clove, a good garlic clove, is 3 grams. Most studies use equivalent of 2 to 5 grams of raw garlic. Crushing and allowing it to sit for 10 minutes, by the way, retains biologically active compounds destroyed by heat. Okay, effects on cholesterol. This is a study, meta-analysis of 16 trials. Authors acknowledge that many of these trials had methodological shortcomings. However, the dried garlic powders in the studies that they analyzed had significantly reduced triglyceride levels, and you'll see here statistically significant 12% average reductions in total cholesterol with garlic compared to placebo. Here's another study, meta-analysis that was done, significant 9% reduction in cholesterol following ingestion of garlic powder. So you'll see that 9 to 12% reductions in total cholesterol is actually pretty good. And if you combine that in combination with a healthy vegetarian diet, then you can really see significant drops, I believe. Here again, just more studies to substantiate that. Platelet aggregation and function, it does help in preventing blood clotting. I'm going to skip over some of these. These are just studies to indicate that it is very effective in keeping blood thin and preventing blood clotting. Garlic and cancer, as I mentioned, there are anti-cancer properties, phytochemicals that we do find in garlic. Here we have stomach cancer risk 13 times lower for Chinese subjects consuming 20 grams of garlic a day than those who ate less than 1 gram. Now, 20 grams, by the way, is about one bulb of garlic. So that's a lot of garlic, but that's a 13 times lower risk of cancer. And in the Iowa Women's Health Study, it was shown to reduce colon cancer risk seen in women who ate garlic more than one time per week. Okay, another cardiovascular herb that's very beneficial, more so researched in Europe, is hawthorn berry. And hawthorn contains flavonoids. It's a very potent antioxidant that can protect blood vessel walls, particularly coronary blood vessels. It's been shown to dilate blood vessels to the heart, increasing flow to the brain. Here again, hawthorn is a fruit. It's a berry. Very natural. You can't really overdose on that. Ginkgo biloba, another herb that has been shown to improve circulation. They find fossils of ginkgo leaf today. Of course, cerebral vascular disease is the third leading cause of death in the United States. Well, I believe a lot of that, of course, is caused by the improper diet. And I want to mention, we're talking about herbs to help get some cardiovascular benefit. But I think the most important thing to do is to follow a healthy, low-fat, ideally vegan, vegetarian diet. And you're going to improve a lot of these conditions just by following that healthy diet. But these can be adjuncts in addition to the optimal diet for heart disease and circulatory diseases. Ginkgo has been beneficial for vertigo, dizziness, ringing in the ears, peripheral vascular disorders and diabetes, Raynaud's disease, post-phlebitis, intermittent claudication, which is a lack of circulation to the lower extremities and the legs, which is actually like atherosclerosis of their vessels and the legs. There have been improvements with ginkgo. You know, a lot of research has been done on cognitive function, showing 54 men, 7 women, 62 to 85 years of age, mild cognitive impairment. They had ginkgo or a placebo, duration for 3 months. And here you have improvements in studies that have been done on increasing accuracy. They did different tests on memory and accuracy, and big improvements as compared to the placebo. To see the benefits, needs to be taken every day, and it's over about a 3 month period of time that benefits are seen in most of the studies. Some people get GI upset with it, rare headaches, but overall the side effects are quite low. In the studies, 0.4 to only 4% of people taking ginkgo had side effects from it. It may have an additive antiplatelet effect with prescription medications such as Coumadin. So if you're taking blood thinning medications, it may not be a good thing to be taking ginkgo with it. You need to talk to your doctor about that. It's been used in China for centuries, and I have to tell you that it's important, and by the way, it's the flavonoids and some of the different ginkgolides. These are phytochemicals that are found in the leaf of ginkgo that have the potent free radical scavenger effects. These are very potent antioxidants that are believed to improve the blood vessels and to also help peripheral circulation and cerebral circulation. That's where memory enhancement may come in. A lot of well-designed studies in Europe, but there has been conflicting studies enhancing memory. There's been a lot of studies in Europe show that it's been effective. In the United States, some of the studies, there's been some studies showing it effective with Alzheimer's patients, but there's been some showing no improvement. So you've got mixed reviews on that. Now, improve memory and concentration in healthy individuals. That's a debatable thing because I know a lot of young people taking ginkgo before they have their final exam, you know, in college, thinking it's going to help them with their memory. And there hasn't been much study to confirm in improve memory with younger people, but more with older people with senility, with Alzheimer's. It does improve circulation, particularly in patients who have intermittent claudication or lack of circulation to the lower extremities. Very potent, strong antioxidant. One thing to be advised is it needs to be avoided 36 hours prior to surgery because of potential increased bleeding. Looking for a proper ginkgo supplement. Now, I do see products out there where it'll say ginkgo capsules, and people will buy them, they'll pay a lot of money for them. But what it is, it's only the ginkgo leaf that's been powdered, and they put it into a capsule, and they charge a lot of money, sometimes more than the standardized extracts for the same price. Don't buy those. You need to get a ginkgo that has about a 50 to 1 concentrated leaf extract that's been standardized. This is important to look for on the ginkgo label, 24% ginkgo flavonoid glycosides and 6% terpenes. Those are key terms because you know that that is a very concentrated ginkgo extract that's been standardized, 24%. So it has some promise with Alzheimer's disease. Some studies that have supported that. This study has significant effect in favor of ginkgo with 3% differences in Alzheimer's disease assessment scale. They did different cognitive studies and found it here again, greater benefit of ginkgo for Alzheimer patients than multi-infarct dementia patients. Significant clinical response in 28% of ginkgo group compared to 10% placebo. Now let's talk about echinacea. And how many of you take echinacea when you feel a cold coming on? I'm just curious. few years ago is more popular than it is now. But echinacea is another well-researched herb. It was first used by the Native Americans and actually introduced to the early settlers in the United States. They used it for colds and for flu symptoms. And we do know that it does stimulate the immune system. It activates phagocytic macrophages, the T lymphocytes, and natural killer cells. It increases levels of fibroblasts and interferon. And, of course, most well known for treating cold and influenza viral infections. Number of studies have been done over the years to verify this, mostly in the European literature. There have been some studies to show positive benefits in the U.S. scientific studies, but there's been some negative studies shown as well. And I think the negative studies, from my observation of them, were using echinacea products that probably weren't the ideal or the most effectively formulated ones. Cold press extracts, the dosage is 2 to 3 liters, 3 or 4 times a day. And the key is, with echinacea, to take it right at the beginning, the first onset, just start to see yourself coming down with a cold or flu, to take it right then. If you wait too long, it's probably not going to be that effective. And continue 24 hours after symptoms, even after your symptoms have improved. We don't recommend taking it because it's immunostimulant. We don't recommend taking immunostimulants over a long period of time, no longer than 8 weeks. Some people take it prophylactically as a preventive when they're exposed, when they're, you know, now we're into flu season. If you tend to be around a lot of people who have cold and flu and you don't want to catch it, it might be a good thing to take it then. Really no toxicity, although you can be allergic. You know, people who are allergic to certain flowers, because this is a flower and it's a root as well as the flower that's used, they can have allergy reactions. As far as drug interactions, there's none that have really been documented in the literature, but it can potentially antagonize, if people are taking immunosuppressive drugs, because it is immune enhancer, it's not a good thing to take if you're taking drugs to suppress the immune system because it'll enhance it. May decrease the effectiveness of corticosteroids, although this hasn't been proven, but there's a potential for that as well. So it's not recommended for people that have autoimmune disorders, tuberculosis, MS, and other types of autoimmune conditions. There's different types of echinacea, echinacea purpurea, above ground parts, echinacea pilata, and echinacea angustifolia. They use the root. This has been approved by the German Commissionee for use as a supportive therapy for colds and flu. And in Europe, it's used extensively for that condition. So we do know that it does boost the immune system. There's questions about cold and flu. Some studies have shown positive. A lot of them show positive, but there's studies that show is not effective either. So I find it a very effective if I have it. I don't get cold and flus that much, but when I do, I use it, and it seems to be quite helpful. We will be right back with more of part two of my lecture on medicinal herbs and herbal supplements after this short break.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
Saw palmetto is an herb that grows in the Florida area, southeastern U.S., and is a very effective herb for many men who have enlarged prostate. It takes 4 to 6 weeks to see the effect of it. It has to be taken regularly for at least 4 to 6 weeks. May be combined with other herbal agents such as pumpkin seed oil. And of course, here we have a healthy prostate here, and you see the urethra where the urine can go through very nicely. But as the prostate enlarges, new growth, it impinges on that flow of urine, and that's what we call benign prostatic hyperplasia or enlarged prostate. The symptoms can lead from frequent urination day or night, sense of urgency all the time, complete to very severe cases where it's complete blockage of the urinary flow. Now, medications that are used for treating enlarged prostate, there's a lot of side effects with them. Dizziness, headaches, weakness, sexual dysfunction, and surgery can lead to some surgical complications, as well as men losing their virility, actually, as a result of the surgery. And typically, in the United States, as men begin to age, around age 40, they see a gradual decrease in the force of urinary flow. prostate is beginning to enlarge. At age 55, 1 in 4 men have BPH symptoms. And by age 80, 8 in 10 men have enlarged prostate. Now, what's interesting is that in countries where they eat largely a plant-based diet, very little meat or animal products, dairy products, less red meat, you don't find prostate enlargement as a major problem like we have in the United States. So the phytochemicals that you find in saw palmetto and pumpkin seed, some of these phytosterols and fatty acids are more rich in a vegetarian or a plant-based diet. Number of clinical studies, well-published, double-blind, placebo-controlled studies in major medical journals, particularly in Europe, because that's where they have more of an interest in the phytochemicals and so forth. We do see increased urinary flow, less urine in the bladder after urination, improved quality of life with men with prostate enlargement. And probably the ideal herbal supplement would be where saw palmetto is in combination with pumpkin seed oil. And the clinical studies show, here again, increased urinary flow, fewer trips to the bathroom at night. And there's really no side effects because these things are very similar to foods. So what is the dosage that's recommended for men with enlarged prostate? We recommend 160 milligrams of a lipophilic extract, a standardized extract, twice a day. This should be standardized to contain 85 to 95% fatty acids and sterols. That's what will be listed on that. I think eating pumpkin seeds is a good thing to do for preventing enlarged prostate too, because of the types of fats and fatty acids. It decreases the production, it's believed, of what we call dihydrotestosterone, or DHT, by inhibiting an enzyme called 5-alpha reductase. It's the DHT, which is the bad type of hormone that causes men to lose their hair, it causes enlarged prostate, and a lot of other things that men have as they get older. It also has anti-inflammatory effects due to inhibition of some of these compounds, too. It's not really recommended for prostate cancer, but for enlarged prostate. Here's your pumpkin seed oil. The German Commissionee recommends pumpkin seed oil. Actually, this is taken right out of the German Commissionee that it's effective for prostate conditions. Now, beta-sitosterol. Beta-sitosterol is another phytochemical we find in many plants. It's found a rich source in soybeans. This is also effective in helping to decrease symptoms associated with enlarged prostate. And you see beta-sitosterol has some similarities in its biochemical structure to testosterone, by the way. Beta-sitosterol, here again, clinical studies, and sometimes you're going to see supplements with beta-sitosterol in combination with saw palmetto and with pumpkin seed. I think that's a good combination. It helps increasing the urinary flow, decrease in residual urine and bladder, decrease in severity of symptoms associated with BHP. Let's talk about some of the herbs for anxiety and stress, valerian and kava. These are just some of the herbs, and one of the ones that I did quite a bit of research on a number of years ago was valerian. It's the number one sleep aid used in Europe. In fact, Galen, who is a Roman physician, used valerian. By the way, he's the one that invented cold cream as well. But he used it effectively back in ancient times for anxiety. It's an anxiolytic, helps people in treating anxiety, insomnia, and reducing stress. It's a calmative herb. And there's been a number of well-designed placebo double-blind studies to show that valerian and valerian root extracts are quite effective in helping to improve the quality of sleep. Now, what valerian does, it doesn't put you to sleep. It kind of puts your body in a way that it allows it to sleep in a restful, calming feeling. It does have sedative properties. It's also antispasmodic and anticonvulsant effects. The phytochemical valerenic acid is believed to be related to the chemical constituents that are active in its calming effects. 300 to 400 milligrams of a concentrated root extract 1 to 3 times a day is what's recommended. However, I want to caution people not to take valerian when you're driving your car and when you're working with heavy machinery and so forth. You need to be alert because it does have very relaxing effects. You know, 1 cup of boiling water over 1 teaspoon of ground dried root is a dosage. 1/2 to 1 teaspoon of a tincture is effective several times a day during periods of stress. How many of you ever smelled valerian? What does it smell like? Actually, the best definition of the smell of valerian is it smells like dirty, well-seasoned, dirty gym socks. So that's why valerian, the root word, comes from a word about scaring the demons away, probably because of its smell. Side effects: mild stomach ache in some people, headaches, excitability, cardiac disturbance have been reported at higher doses, but it's very rare. It seems to be quite a safer, but I do not recommend taking it if you are taking sedatives or antidepressant medications. And really, it's not an herb that I would recommend for young children. I know people, you know, sometimes the young kids keep us crazy and we want to calm them down. There's actually an ethical issue about giving sedatives, even herbal sedatives, to young kids, if that's really an ethical thing to do. There are other herbs that you could give kids that would maybe calming, that would be safer. So it does enhance sleep, reduces stress and anxiety. I want to mention there's two other herbs that are also helpful. That's passion flower and German chamomile flower. The extracts from these in combination with valerian can be quite effective. And hops is another herb that can be effective. St. John's wort, here we have the number one antidepressant medicine used in Germany, used in Europe for centuries for depression, menopause, fatigue. A very effective herb, has anti-inflammatory properties, and the dosage for St. John's wort is 300 to 900 milligrams per day of a standardized extract, and it needs to contain 0.3% hypericin. That's what you want to look for in St. John's wort. Not just a St. John flower powder, but you want to look for a standardized extract based on hypericin. 600 to 900 milligram doses are more common taken with food. Not recommended for pregnant women, by the way. Kava. How many of you take kava? Here we are in Hawaii. Do you like it? Does it help? Kava, again, it helps with anxiety, stress, and insomnia. 70 milligrams of kava lactones in the form of standardized extract 2 to 3 times a day. What's recommended for anxiety, stress, and for restlessness. 180 to 210 milligrams of kava lactones 1 hour before going to bed. Of course, here in Hawaii, there's a lot of the kava bars and so forth. People drink it, and they're not really taking standardized extracts, but it's been known to be quite effective for a long time. Milk thistle. Now, the whole area of herbal medicine, there's a lot of claims about herbs for detoxification. And unfortunately, a lot of these herbs, there's a lot of hype with it. But milk thistle indeed is an herb that has detoxifying properties. Now, the act of detoxification actually is in removing potential toxins from the body. And we get toxins in our body in many ways. From the consumption of foods and consumption of things we put into our body, whether it's alcohol or tobacco, breathing, skin exposure, all these things can add toxins to the body. And our liver processes all the toxins. It can excrete it through the intestines, through waste material, also through the kidney and through the urine. And, of course, the liver is our most important organ for detoxification. Its health is critical to almost every body function. It's a unique and capable of regenerating itself. Liver cells can actually regenerate themselves. And here we have a liver cell, and see the cell membrane is very good here, but when toxins, many of them are free radicals, they damage the cells, they damage the membrane of the cell and attack it, and that's when the liver cells are destroyed. Now, milk thistle seed is approved by the German government for chronic liver conditions. And the active compound in milk thistle is what we call silymarin. Silymarin is a mixture of antioxidant compounds found in the milk thistle seed extract. And laboratory studies have shown that silymarin can be effective in protecting liver cells from damage from alcohol, carbon tetrachloride, which is dry cleaning solvent, acetaminophen or Tylenol. Here again, when I talk to patients, they're taking lots of Tylenol. I recommend, because of the damage being done to their liver from the Tylenol, that they should take milk thistle seed extract. And even death cap mushrooms, it's been shown to inhibit the damage done from poisonous mushrooms. I want to just close by saying, we talked about supplements, but the most important herbs that you should take every day is the herbs that you have 3 times a day with your breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, what about supplements? Recognize that the term supplement means supplement. It's something that complements a diet. It does not replace food. We just don't live off taking capsules and tablets and pills. Although I'm a big proponent of supplements, I think we need to have a good balance. I know people that eat terrible diets and they just take supplements all the time. So supplements don't replace the foods that we need to eat. We need to make sure that we eat an ideally an all-plant vegetarian diet, I think, is the optimal diet for health. And then you may want to take some supplements in addition for specific conditions, whether it's herbal supplements or nutritional supplements on a regular basis to maintain and promote optimal health. So I want to thank you very much, and I'll be here up here if you have any other questions later on. Thank you.
You have been listening to part two and my closing remarks of my lecture on medicinal herbs and herbal supplements. Now, if you missed part one of my lecture or would like to hear this two-part lecture series again, go to our Life Talk Radio Archive podcast page at www.lifetalk.net. That's www.lifetalk.net, and look up the Health and Longevity Radio Show podcast, and you'll find those two programs on that page. If you would like to learn more information about medicinal herbs, I have written a small booklet called Medicinal Herbs, a Vital Reference Guide. If you would like to obtain and receive a personally autographed copy of my booklet, go to my website at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's healthandlongevityradio.com. On that website, go to the contact page, and that will give you the information on how to contact my office so that you can obtain this booklet. Or you can call my office at 805-722-7958. That's 805-722-7958. This booklet contains information of over 60 different medicinal herbs that can contribute to your personal health and wellness. That's 805-722-7958.
To learn more about the books written by our guests and books written or recommended by Dr. Westerdahl in this program, please visit our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. There you can learn how to obtain your copy of these valuable and informative books. Search each page for yourself and see how you can live a happier, healthier, and longer life. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com.
That's all for this week. Until next time, this is Dr. John Westerdahl, wishing you the best of health and longevity.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.